February 17th, 2017, Masoret. So we're talking about the plague of darkness. And there are certain things that are not that easy to understand. Because the idea of total darkness is something that we see, you know, that such a thing can happen. There are places where it's you can't see a thing. In fact, the Ramban says that they couldn't even. I mean, the natural question would be, well, what about fire? Making a fire so you could see. I mean, they didn't have electricity, obviously. But that also, if the air is so dense, then, you know, you can't even light a flame. So it wouldn't help. So that part of it, the part of it about the absolute darkness is something that we can understand. And I'm not saying it was a natural thing. Obviously, it was a plague. But the manifestation of such a thing is definitely within the realm of nature. I mean, the natural order. God is manipulating it. Okay. What I think should be explained a little bit. What about the fact that they couldn't move? Does that make sense? What would prevent them from moving? Now, okay, so I was talking about a thickness. But is that conceivable that it should be so thick that what? It's like a person is in a, you know, like on the beach, if they cover the guy completely in sand. Person, you know, they dig a hole and it's completely, so he can't move. Is it that kind of a phenomenon? That's not so easy to understand why they couldn't move. Get up or more, you know, that's what Rashi says. Someone who was sitting couldn't get up. Also, we had the question about Ulechol B'nai Yisrael. That as far as the Jews are concerned, well, it's the Pasuk is making the point that in this particular, because that's a question in general, which I think we've covered, should we assume by all the Makos that they only afflicted the Egyptians and not the Jews? And I pointed out, I discovered that it's a machlokus between the Ramban. The Ramban maintains that in all the plagues, we should assume that it affected the Egyptians but not the Jews. Then he goes into the question as to, because the question is, so why does it point out in certain cases? Because there are certain makos where it points out that as far as the Jews were concerned, however, like the one with the animals dying, it didn't affect the cattle of the Jews. And here too we find that it points out that as far as the Jews were concerned, so from this you would naturally deduce that without the Torah pointing it out, that you should assume that it affected the Jews as well, except in specific cases. That's the position of the Evan Ezra. We took that up, and we could go back to it maybe just to review, but not right now. As far as this is concerned, the Ramban has an explanation why the Torah points it out in these particular cases. But the point is, however, that as far as the B'nai Yisrael is concerned, Hayor B'moshvosam. See, it's very interesting the way the psukim are constructed, which we've discussed a number of times. It always leaves you wondering a little bit. It's not spelled out that precisely in terms of every detail. What does that mean, Hayor B'moshvosam? Does that mean that they had light in their dwelling places? If that's the case, then it's easier to understand. Which would mean to say that this plague of darkness was located, had a location. And there were locations where you didn't have it. So If we're saying that B'mosh V'osam means where they dwelled in their dwellings, now dwellings doesn't necessarily mean just inside their house. It would mean the area where they dwelled. It didn't affect that area. So then it's okay. It didn't affect that area. Of course, then you could ask the question, what about Egyptians that happened to be there? But that doesn't come up. So you'd have to assume that if an Egyptian, because we do read that there were Egyptians who lived, I guess, as boarders in the houses of the Jews. Umigaras Besa, because that was part of the requirement that they should request gifts of clothing from their neighbors and from the one who lives in your house. So I would assume that if you learn it that way, I mean, it's simpler to learn it that way. Because you don't have to assume additional miracles. And the way the miracle manifests itself makes sense. So then it's essentially a question of location. That this plague afflicted the Egyptians, where the Egyptians lived, but it didn't afflict the locales where the Jews lived. Still, you have to answer the question about the inability to get up or sit down. But the thing is like this, we read the Rashi yesterday, which contradicts this idea. Because Rashi says that the one of the purposes, we were also doing, I don't know if we completed the Rashi, well, that's where we left off. Let me get back to that Rashi. You see, the idea of a lokamu ish mitachtav, and from which we derive the idea that a person couldn't even move, which is basically means come a wish, nor could a person rise from his place for 3 days. Okay, it's important. Again, that's not precise. What does that mean? So Rashi, the way Rashi is learning it, it's as we said, that the person was like frozen in his place. Rashi says, Shalokamu ish mitachlev yoshev en yachol amod. If he was sitting, he couldn't get up. V'yomeit en yachol eshev. And if he was standing, he couldn't sit. So basically, Rashi is saying that he was immobilized. And that, to me, is difficult to understand. How do you understand? Why would darkness, no matter how dark it is, on the darkest night, in the darkest place, you're able to move? I mean, you may have difficulty because you don't know where you're going, so you wouldn't want to be doing too much movement, but you could move a little bit, and you'd have to, I don't know. Well, first of all, it depends. Certainly in your own house, if you're in your own house and it's absolute darkness, you can't see a thing, and you can't put on the lights for whatever reason. Okay, so it's a blackout, a complete blackout, and you don't have those special flashlights that you're supposed to have for these kinds of occasions. I guess this is a good reminder anyway. It's always a good thing to have that. And so you don't have access to any light whatsoever. But I don't think you'd be frozen in your place. You'd be able to move. And given that it's your house and you're pretty familiar, you'd move carefully. You don't want to bump into things, but you just sort of have a sense of where you are. And you could tap the walls and make your way from one room to another room. And suppose you just wanted to go to sleep. You definitely could find your bed. You'd go slow, careful. When you got to, let's assume it's upstairs, you have to walk up the steps. Again, you'd be careful. And you would know where your bedroom is located, and you'd find your way to that place. The truth is, it probably does happen sometimes, even now, when you're coming and it's pitch black, and you know the switch to the lights is not right there by the door or for whatever reason, you can make your way through. So what does that mean? What's Rashi saying? Because I was thinking about that, and even v'yomesh choshech, is that the explanation? In other words, that it was something physical, that the darkness was not just the absence of light, but it was something that filled the air. But are we saying that it was so thick that it would be impossible to move? Before we go any further, I just want to read the Evan Ezra and how he learns it. So he says, "V'lo kamo ish mitachdav," that a person couldn't move from his place. He says, "Mi beso," from his house, "kamo shavu ish tachdav," as where it says each person should remain in his place. Because tachtav means under him. So under him is a reference to his place. And she says, ki ana yelchu below or. Because where could they go without light? So you see that that's a completely different interpretation. I mean, because I wasn't aware of this Evan Ezra. I always took it to mean, you know, literally, like Rashi. I guess because that's basically the way we're taught also in school. Just basically the way Rashi. And, you know, sometimes something becomes so ingrained, you don't question it, and you don't search for a different meaning. But the Evan Ezra then makes perfect sense. That it was an overwhelming darkness, and nobody could see anything, and therefore everybody was bound to his home. He couldn't leave. But within his own home, he could move. It's not that he's saying that the person could not physically move. It's just that he couldn't go anywhere. Of course, that would add to the plague. It's not just, the Torah is not just recording a fact that they didn't go anywhere. And because it is an element in the plague, they couldn't see anything and they were isolated. Each person was completely isolated. Normally when you have a problem affects a community, so whatever it is, they have these storms or tornadoes, so it affects people, but the natural tendency is to get together with others. To get together and help each other. And that compensates for it. They help each other and they comfort each other and they get each other through. So here you see that the plague was directed at that element as well. That is, the ordinary reaction, that's a tremendous thing, a support system, that people are able to get together and work through something and comfort each other or help each other, and this person has this food, the other person has the other, and they could somehow get through this, was not available to them. And that's a very significant factor, because you're completely isolated and you have to deal with the problem completely by yourself. So but according to the Evan Ezra, so you don't have to deal with the question. It's not that they were physically incapable, it's rather that they couldn't leave the house because of the darkness. But we have to explain the way Rashi learns. And also the way Rashi learns, so I would imagine, now, if you took it any further, in terms of the Evan Ezra, and you asked, what about B'nai Yisrael? He doesn't really have any commentary on the B'nai Yisrael. But I would imagine that he would learn that in where the B'nai Yisrael lived, it didn't affect it. So they had Orb and Moshosam. But what about a Jew who came, for example? He wouldn't be able to. I don't think he's going to learn that you have to... it's true that the source of the plague is a, you know, it's from Hashem. It's not part of the natural order. It wouldn't have happened except for the will of Hashem. But once Hashem manipulates and brings it about, so it functions. It functions and that becomes part of the natural order. So therefore, it's not going to make a difference. It's not going to make sense that a place is totally dark, but a Jew can see and an Egyptian can't see. That doesn't make any sense. So I don't know that he would accept that interpretation, that for Rashi it's significant interpretation, because for Rashi he lists it as one of the objectives, one of the purposes was that the Jews would be able to see what the Egyptians had, which implies that a Jew, that it had to do with who you are. It was dark for the Egyptians and it was light for the Jews. And as I said, we have to try and explain that. Lim takes up the question of the darkness. He starts off, I mean, there's different opinions over here amongst the commentators about the Malbim. All right, let me just read it. It's worth reading. Abarbanel writes that because winds coming off the sea are very moist, the wind that expelled the locusts created... Well, that's interesting because he connects it. It's a continuity, a continuation of the plague of the locusts, which came right before this one. And then when that was removed, it was removed by the winds. So he's saying that the wind that expelled the locusts, the Arba, created thick, humid clouds of vapor throughout the entire land of Mitzrayim. Due to Mitzrayim's peculiar climate that inhibits raindrop formation, these clouds remained as an extremely dense, dark fog, so densely thick as to extinguish any candle lit within it, similar to that which occurs in deep subterranean caverns. Now the Malbim is saying, the trouble with Abarbanel's approach is that attributing naturalistic causes to the plagues merely serves to downplay their miraculous character and to minimize their lessons, as mentioned previously. Okay, so I'm not going into that. Apparently he's discussed this issue as to whether we should view the plagues as being natural phenomena, which were brought about by God, or whether they're completely of a different order, you know, they're completely miraculous in terms of the substance of what they are. We're not taking that machlokas up now. But he's learning that way. The truth is that the plagues were completely novel phenomena. Divine miracles independent of any natural causation other than Moshe stretching forth his hand. So he's saying in this case, Moshe stretched forth his hand to the sky, quote, and the air thickened with dense vapors for 3 days, so dense as to prevent the passage of light. Afterward came another 3 days, wherein the air thickened further, so much so that people could barely inhale it, unable even to stand up, due to shortness of breath. Thus the sages described this plague as palpable darkness. Okay, so that's providing us with an explanation. That would be answering my question. Very, very interesting pshat. Okay. I mean, the manifestation doesn't seem to be that different than the Abarbanel, except for the fact that he's learning that it wasn't a result of natural winds and so on and so forth. So he's saying it was like a special thing that was brought about miraculously. And it's a thickening of the air with dense vapors for 3 days. So like Rashi, I mean, he's saying again, there's two units of 3 days. The first 3 days was essentially the inability to see, but then it keeps getting stronger. And in the second 3 days, the air thickened further. So the thickening of the air, so it's not that the thickening of the air was such that a person couldn't move. A person could move, but the thickening of the air affected the person. That is to say that he couldn't breathe properly. So there's, then he couldn't move because it would be such an exertion to move. Due to that situation, there was just enough air, and when a person would breathe, he'd have just enough air to survive, but he couldn't move, because that would be such a tremendous exertion. That's what he says. Afterwards came another 3 days, wherein the air thickened further, so much so that people could barely inhale it, unable even to stand up due to shortness of breath. So that's an interesting point. Thus, according to him, if you had a person had an oxygen tank or something like that, and he was able to breathe normally, he would have been able to move. I mean, he couldn't see, but he would not be inhibited from moving. So, therefore, according, I mean, this is going to set itself up as basically a machlokas in terms of how we're supposed to understand this. And because it seems according to the Ibn Ezra, it was just one theme, just one effect, which was to put a person in absolute darkness. And as a result of that, there was isolation, darkness and isolation. And he's stuck in his house. But he's able to move in his house, just that he couldn't leave his house. But according to Rashi, and according to, he's agreeing with this point. See, because that's another question. Is it one plague of darkness that lasts for 3 days? Because it's not clear. If you read the Psukim, is it really clear that it's two separate units? Let's take a look at the Psukim here. It says that this is in chapter Yud, Pasuk Chav Beis. Vayet Moshe es yado al ha-shamayim. Moshe stretched forth his hands towards the heaven. Vayhi choshech afela. And there was a dense a darkness. B'chol eretz Mitzrayim. In the entire land of Egypt. Shlosh ha-shamim. 3 days. So in other words, is that describing the entire duration of the Makkah? 3 days. Then it says, Lo ro ish es achiv. A person couldn't see his brother. Okay, so we said that yesterday, because normally you could identify your brother. But it was, the extent of the darkness was such that he could not identify even something that he was extremely familiar with. Then it says, Lo kama ish mitachtav shlosh hashamim. And the person could not get up from beneath him, from under him, for 3 days. Now, there's two ways that you can learn this. It's not absolutely clear that it's a total of 6 days, because Pasuk Chav Gimel is coming to fill in the gaps. It's coming to tell you the effects of the Choshech. So in doing so, it repeats. It could be a repetition that a person couldn't see his brother, nor could he get up from beneath himself for 3 days. Ulechol b'nei Yisrael, and for the b'nei Yisrael, there was light in their dwelling places. So there's two ways that you can learn. Either you can learn that in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, it's describing two factors. That is, the first 3 days, and then it gets stronger, and you have the second 3 days, which is the way that Rashi learns, and which is the way that the Malbim is learning, that there were two units, and it gets progressively more painful. And that is, the first 3 days is complete blindness, can't see anything, but you can move. And in the second 3 days, you can't even move. Now, the Malbim has helped us to understand the inability to move. Because my question was, I don't get it. I understand the thickening of the air to the extent that it blocks out any type of light. But it seems hard to imagine that it would be that heavy that a person couldn't move. So he's resolved that question, because it's so heavy that it affects a person. I mean, that's a known thing, that right, higher altitudes. When you go up to higher altitudes, it becomes harder to breathe. We're all familiar with that. And that's why climbing these Mount Everest, all these mountains, that's a major problem. Aside from the fact that you reach a point, you know, the weather conditions are crazy. How cold and so on and so forth, and the winds, the danger. I mean, it's hard for me to conceive. But I mean, that's the challenge. That's why people are attracted to it. There's a certain mentality. There is a certain mentality that exults in that kind of thing. The feeling that they can triumph over these obstacles. I mean, I'm not going into the psychology of it now. Just the first thought that comes to mind with these things is that I think it gives a person a feeling of immortality. That person is always looking for that. And if he does a tremendously daring physical feat that nobody else can do or very few people can do, it gives him that feeling that he can conquer anything. I think that that's part of the motivation. But of course, in the course of doing it, I mean, many people lose their lives. So it's a little ironic. But it's true that breathing becomes more difficult. The higher altitudes, the air is thinner. No, but I mean, you see, again, we see the wisdom of God and the creation, that man can't live without the oxygen, and he gets the oxygen from the air. But in order to do so, the air has to be designed perfectly to his needs. So that if the air is too thin, then it becomes very difficult to breathe. The same is true in this case. It's not because of thin, it's because of thick. But in general, athletes, if they're going to be involved in competitions in places where the altitude is higher, so that they go there in advance to train there. Or just in general, they'll train in these, even if they're going to be having the competition in a normal area. But if you train in an area where of higher altitudes where it's harder to breathe, so ostensibly you're going to get in much better condition. Because you're in such good condition that even the thinner air suffices. So how much more so if, when you go back to a normal place? Now, whatever. So that's the way the Malbim explains, and I think something along those lines resolves the problem as far as Rashi is concerned. He just says that the phrase 3 days is repeated, indicating that there were two separate three-day periods, one more severe than the next. Thus the verse states, there will be darkness the first 3 days, and then, end quote, and it will be very dark in the final 3 days. Okay. Now, still doesn't answer the other problem we're having over here. The other problem we're having over here is Rashi. That is the meaning of, you know, B'nai Yisrael. That for the Jews, there was light in their place. Go look at the Rashbam. And the Rashbam, in general, I mean, his entire focus is on the pshat. So he says, "Hoy or b'moshvosam afilu shehu yoshev eitzel beis hamitzri." Even if he dwelled near the house of the Mitzri. That, I don't know if that's exactly the same. First, when I first saw it, I thought maybe he's learning like Rashi. But I don't think it's the same. Because he's saying, even if he dwelled. So that there's a difference. What's the difference between what he's saying and what Rashi is saying? But what is he saying? What is he saying? Apparently he's saying that the light for the Jews was in their dwellings, in their dwelling place. And he's adding, though, that it's not like I wanted to say, well, you have two different dwelling places. It's like, you know, two distinct places. You have New York, you have New Jersey. So let's say the Jews lived in New Jersey and the Choshech was in New York. So, okay, it's a different place. But he's saying even if he dwelled next to, even if he dwelled next to the house of the Mitzri. So then I guess what he's saying is that it was very, very specific. That it's not the same as Rashi, though. It's merely saying that it manifested itself, the locations that it affected were the locations where the Egyptians lived. So that the houses, or the dwelling places, or the neighborhoods, whatever you want to call it, of the Jews was not affected, even if they were close. So it wasn't like manifesting itself. That would be the miraculous nature of it. If it was just a natural occurrence, if there's a storm or if there's, you know, something along those lines, it's not going to delineate itself according to Jews or not Jews. It's going to hit a certain location. And whoever is in that location will be affected. What he's saying is that it's not the case over here. That the way it manifested itself was a miraculous phenomenon. That it would affect the areas where the Egyptians lived or the houses that the Egyptians lived in, but not the houses that the Jews lived in. Okay, but that's not what Rashi's saying. I would imagine then that the Rashbam, according to this pshat, but what about if a Jew was in the house of the Egyptian? So then it becomes really, really difficult. It becomes really difficult because how could it be that you have this phenomenon that is the darkness? The darkness has manifested itself. I mean, so how could it be that an Egyptian can't see, but a Jew can see? That would seem to be an impossibility. I'm not saying that God couldn't do it, but that would require a whole other miracle, which would be difficult to comprehend. So how do you understand? Does anybody have any suggestion? I'm going to offer a possibility that occurred to me. And that is, and again, the question doesn't make sense, of course, in accordance with the words in the Chumash and so on and so forth. But let me just toss out the possibility. In other words, are we to say that what happened was a change occurred in the physical environment? And that's being described as darkness. All right, it's a special kind of darkness and so forth. The thickening of the air so it doesn't permit any light. And then it makes it very difficult to breathe and so on and so forth. Or no, nothing occurred in the physical environment. But it was an affliction of the individual. And the affliction of the individual was that he couldn't see anything. It was a certain type of a physical change in the person, let's call it an illness or whatever. And that can happen. Persons can suffer from a disease, which makes it blindness. He could suffer from blindness. And if he's suffering from blindness, so then he can't see anything. And the Yamesh Choshech would be a problem, though. I don't know if I could resolve that. But let me just go through with the idea anyways. If that's the case, if he was afflicted with a certain type of a illness, it doesn't have to be an illness that we can identify either, although illness can cause a person to go blind, and there's even a temporary blindness that affects a person. It would also have the effect that he couldn't move. It could paralyze him as well. Now, if we're going to learn that all the changes that are experienced by the Egyptians, it's not because of anything in the environment. It's rather because there was an affliction of their physical constitution, which manifested itself in two stages. First, that they couldn't see anything, but they were able to move. Obviously, they couldn't go anywhere, but they, at least within their own confines, they could get up and sit down, things of that sort. But the second phase was where they experienced the paralysis, that they couldn't move. They were stuck in their place. If that's the way you learn, v'lechol b'nei Yisrael hayor b'moshvosam, for all the b'nei Yisrael, they didn't experience this. So this plague did not affect them. And that's what Rashi, then it makes perfect sense, that if it didn't apply to the Jews, then they could walk inside the house of the Egyptian and they could see. Because, as I said, it was nothing in the actual environment. It was in the people, and the Jews weren't afflicted by it. The question is whether this pshat can be reconciled with the psukim, because choshech hafela is not a problem, because that's describing the full extent. Because when a person has difficulty seeing, there's different degrees. Even a blind person, and many blind people are not totally blind. They can make out certain things, certain images. It's just that it's not enough to be able to identify what they're seeing. But perhaps a certain amount of light can get in there. It's just that it's not enough. It's a quantitative thing. But in this case, it would be a qualitative thing. That I think is all right. But what does it mean, v'yamesh choshech? That's the sense of yamesh means that there's certain substance to it. This Sforno explains, v'yamesh choshech. Because that too is an interesting phrase. He says, v'yaser es ha-choshech ha-tivi shalayla. It'll remove the normal darkness of the night. Ki umnam choshech ha-layla, because indeed the darkness of the night, hu avir, is air, muchan l'kabel ha-or, which is prepared, so to speak, capable of receiving light. It's darkness merely in the sense of the absence of light. However, this darkness, will be air which is not prepared to receive the light. Larov uvav, because of the extent of its thickness. So it's something in the character, the quality of the air. V'lo yipol olav heder ha'or biyoser bilti muchan elav. Okay. And that's why he says, it says, v'lo ro ish esachev. A person couldn't see. Why? Kilo hispik l'zeh or ner vavuka. In other words, there was a chance. So, because that's the question we started out with. So why can't you light a torch? Because he's saying it's in the nature of the... Well, that's the plain shot. I mean, the plain shot is that the inability to see was brought about by a change in the environment. And that's the way the Sforno was learning it, and he explains the psukim beautifully. That's the v'yamesh choshech. V'yamesh choshech is explaining the new reality. Because you'll ask, okay, so it's dark. If it's dark, so you light a torch. Not the worst thing in the world. So he's saying there's a change in the character, the quality of the air, that the air will be such that it will not be, in other words, the problem will not just be the absence of light. That's not what it means, but rather the presence of a type of air which is not capable of receiving the light, and that's the way it's going to be for 3 days, and that's why even a torch wouldn't be of any help. So that, to me, is a challenge. I'm just throwing it out there as a possibility that perhaps Rashi held that the entire thing can be explained from the subjective standpoint, which I like the idea. That is, that it was an affliction that fell upon the person, and it manifested itself as though it was absolutely blind, an absolute blindness. And the second effect of it was the inability to move, a certain paralysis. So absolute blindness and paralysis. And thus, when the Jews came, they were there, they didn't have this problem. And they were able to see. So that sets the stage for Rashi's pshat in terms of the purpose. Because this is not just a tangential point according to Rashi. Because this point has significance. That is, it's related, it's part of the very purpose of the plague. Because he mentions, we did this yesterday, that it had two purposes. That, take a look at the Rashi. He says, the first 3 days, a person couldn't see his brother. Then another 3 days, doubled, an additional darkness, that they couldn't stand up. That the person who was sitting couldn't stand, and the person who was standing couldn't sit. Then he says, and why did God bring the darkness upon them? So we did yesterday, we did the interpretation that this was the time when God wanted to give the punishment to the Jews who refused to join together and Yetzias Mitzrayim and leaving Egypt. We went through that entire thing. And that was akin to the rejection of God. They preferred to be Egyptians. I guess in a sense it's like a negation of the bris, of the covenant. And it had to be something which was hidden, because it would undermine the entire purpose. For if the Egyptians were to see that happening, and they're Jews, so they wouldn't understand the real reason, and then they would undermine, so they'd say, it's not just us. Whatever's happening over here is a natural phenomenon. It affects the Jews, it affects us. So in order for this to happen, it had to be hidden from the Egyptians. And the second reason, which is a very interesting reason, was that the Jews searched out. That the Jews were free to go through their houses and to see their vessels. And when they left, they would ask them for certain things, and they would deny, they'd say, we don't have it, and then they would say, we saw it in your house, and this is where it is. What we explained yesterday was that even though the psukim indicate that the Egyptians had a very favorable attitude to the Jews, that's the sense that you get, because it associates the giving with the favor. When it tells us about the fact that the Jews asked, and because otherwise it seems to me that in general that whole idea seems preposterous. Why would they give the Jews? And to the contrary, we would expect that they would look down upon them, they would despise them, they were the slaves and so forth. But the Pasuk tells us that this transformation had taken place. That a transformation of attitude, that which is completely unexpected, and it's worth inquiring. We've taken it up from time to time. How do you make sense out of that? Because when I bring this up with, you know, like ordinary people, not people that are really students, so everything is no problem. It says because God placed the favor. God placed the favor of the nation in the eyes of the Egyptians, Vayashilum, and they loaned them, or they gave them, whatever. So, if I bring up this question, how do you understand that? For many people, it's not a question. God changed their attitude. But I don't look at it that way. It's not that, well, one minute you can't stand the Jews, and then poof, it's a miracle. Oh, now it's like a person is hypnotized. It's almost as if a person is hypnotized and to love the Jews. That's the suggestion. You should love the Jews. Rather, God did things. God is the source, but he did things. He orchestrated things in such a way that they came to admire the Jews tremendously. And then it adds that also the man Moshe, Gadol Meod, was exceedingly great. So I learned that this is something which we can try and explain. That is, it happened in a natural way. Then, of course, we have to try and find out what exactly is the psychology behind it. But I'm mentioning it over here because the plain sense of the psukim is that they wanted to give them. So this Rashi seems to be out of sync with that. Of course, what you could say is that that's not everybody. Not everybody. There were those people that, again, the Torah talks in general terms. It says they emptied out Egypt. I don't think that means that there was no objects left. It means that it got a tremendous response and they gave them very, very generously. But that doesn't mean every individual. You're always going to find cheapskates. What about Egyptians that didn't, you know, that even liked the Jews, but many people are very, very stingy about their garments, their jewelry, and so forth. It is an amazing phenomenon. So Rashi is saying that this was an important thing. All right, we'll have to stop over here, but maybe we'll just give it some thought. Okay, fine. So there were some individuals, but why has this become a major purpose of the plague itself?